All right, everybody, I'm Logan Alec. I'm a CPA, and in this video, I want to talk to you about why wages haven't tracked productivity since the 1970s. Now, the usual understanding of wage labor is that you'll get paid a certain amount per hour or per week based on how productive you are. So this is the idea of trickle-down economics, that we just need to stimulate economic growth, and then we'll see wages go up at all levels. But in this video, I'm going to look at a report from the Economic Policy Institute, which found that even though productivity rose by a little over 72% from 1973, to 2014, so 41 years, median hourly compensation only went up by just under 9%. In other words, workers had to produce $8 extra of value just to earn $1 extra in wages. This goes against some common assumptions about market economics, so hopefully in this video I can help explain why wage growth has slowed down over the past 50 or so years. I want to start with the data. Many of you may not be familiar with this study, so here's the graph if you want to see the numbers I'm talking about. You'll see that wages and productivity are almost the same line from 1948 to 1973. Basically, anytime productivity went up, there was a corresponding increase in wages. So, as we developed more powerful technologies, more efficient work processes, things like that, workers received most of those benefits. But after the year 1973, things changed dramatically, and you can see that the compensation line not only stops going up, but actually decreases from 73 until the late 90s. Meanwhile, productivity went up by almost 50% over the same time period, and if you calculate the total change from 1973 to 2014, the result is that productivity increased by 138.7%, while compensation only increased by 9%. Now, obviously, this is a controversial issue. You could ask 10 different politicians why they think this trend exists, and you'll probably get 10 different answers. So, not an economist, I'm not going to reduce this to a single issue, but I do want to cover some of the factors that are relevant here. When I was preparing for this video, I found a few notable trends that might account for some of this data. Reason number one, CEO pay has increased rapidly since the 60s and 70s. Again, those gains didn't reach workers, and in fact, the Economic Policy Institute also found that CEO pay went up by almost 1,000% over a similar period of time. In 1965, the average CEO made 20 times as much as their average worker, but when this study was released in 2019, that gap had increased to 278 CEO dollars for every one worker dollar. So there's a very strong connection between worker wages leveling off and CEO pay going up. The money that was previously going back into working class paychecks has instead been going to CEOs for at least two generations, which is obviously going to have far-reaching effects on our economy. Of course, CEO compensation cannot explain the entire trend on its own, but it's certainly a key factor in this discussion. Number two, we haven't increased the minimum wage. I don't want to make this video about whether or not we should increase the minimum wage, but another clear contributor to stagnant wages is just the fact that our government has not increased them statutorily. This has happened in some states and cities that have set up their own minimum wages, but currently the federal minimum wage is just $7.25 per hour. The American minimum wage has a long history. It was first created in 1938, so toward the end of the Great Depression, and at that time the federal minimum wage was just 25 cents per hour. Now that sounds terrible, but 25 cents in 1938 would be worth around $4.60 today. That's not a great wage, but it's a lot more than 25 cents. From there, the government gradually increased the minimum wage based on inflation and other factors, and it had reached $1 per hour by the year 1956. Again, you wouldn't be happy with $1 an hour, but that dollar is equivalent to more than $9.50 today, which means that the minimum wage, at least at the federal level, has actually decreased in purchasing power by around 25% over the last 64 years. Of course, many places have their own minimum wage laws that supersede the federal minimum, but the point is that from a federal perspective, we haven't used legislation to ensure that those gains reach low and middle income workers. The federal government has generally kept the minimum wage consistent with inflation, but it hasn't done the same with productivity. So in my view, it's hard to see what would change this trend other than the minimum wage law that addressed some of these inequities. I'll put the minimum wage map up on the screen here. You'll see that a lot of red states use the federal minimum wage, which means there are millions of people earning $7.25 per hour right now. Obviously, stagnant wages aren't just an issue for minimum wage workers, but this is one of the most concrete steps we could take right now if you wanted to address this issue. Now, the real overarching problem here seems to be the fact that we have millions of jobs that currently need to be done by a human worker but aren't being paid anything more than $7.25 per hour. If you followed Andrew Yang, you may have heard about his idea for universal basic income or UBI. I made a video on this topic, so I'll put a link to that one in the description below or up here at the top of the screen in case you want to check that out. But Yang and some other UBI advocates think that the only sustainable way to respond to this trend is to start paying everyone enough to cover basic necessities employees, even if they don't work at all. And that way, as automation starts to creep into more and more industries, we don't have to worry about it driving down wages or creating an even larger gap between the executives and the workers. Of course, it isn't that simple in practice. There are a lot of good arguments on both sides, but we might need that kind of innovative solution in order to maintain a healthy middle class, even as automation continues to change the way we work. Reason number three, low-wage workers don't have as much bargaining power. Okay, I want to talk about a third issue here. This one is more of a general concern, but American workers, and particularly low-wage workers, don't have as much bargaining power as more skilled workers. That probably sounds obvious. Minimum wage workers are generally replaceable. Their jobs tend to be easier to automate out, and typically turnover is more common in low-wage positions compared to jobs with better pay. And when you consider the impact of all these factors, it's clear that people who are earning minimum wage or close to minimum wage won't have much leverage when negotiating with their employer, especially if that employer is a large corporation. Something like 2/3 of low-wage workers are employed by companies with more than 100 employees, and obviously a big enterprise isn't going to have an incentive to offer raises to minimum wage workers when they could probably just get somebody else to fill that job for the same price. And I think what we're seeing here is that when you look at jobs that are in higher demand, companies have more motivation to pay their workers fairly and attract top talent from other businesses. But that kind of dynamic is essentially absent at the lower end of the wage scale, and companies don't need to do much more than pay people just barely enough to survive. For example, the Economic Policy Institute found the average Uber driver earns just over $9 per hour after deducting things like Uber fees, vehicle expenses, and payroll taxes. Of course, the drivers themselves have almost no leverage here, since Uber won't have any trouble replacing them with another driver, especially right now when so many people are unemployed. Over the next decade or two, we'll probably start to see human drivers being replaced by self-driving cars, and our economy is barely supporting these drivers as it is, so it's hard to say whether we'll be able to effectively handle that shift toward automation. Again, the universal basic income is a really popular solution to this problem, and that's something we might see in the near future. Basically, the idea is that people won't necessarily need to work in order to live, which will at least hopefully lead businesses to provide better working conditions in order to attract more workers. But there are also some concerns with this plan, and even if it works out, I'm not sure a UBI on its own will be enough to significantly shift the trend of stagnant wages. For example, once we start paying out a universal basic income, the government might compensate for those expenses by cutting other social programs, which would end up putting us back in the same position. Yang's proposal is a monthly payment of $1,000 per person. Yes, that would be unprecedented, but at the same time, it's going to be very difficult to live on $12,000 per year, even if you're also receiving other benefits. Of course, it's hard to say how people react to receiving a basic income. There have been a few small-scale trials and studies, but giving 125 people $500 per month for 18 months is very different from paying $1,000 a month to every single American. So even though UBI might be promising, I don't want to say it's the perfect solution, and we might need to explore other ideas if we're serious about bringing more of the benefits of increased productivity to low-wage workers. Reason number four, outsourcing puts pressure on wages. Okay, finally, I want to talk about outsourcing. Now, obviously, outsourcing isn't new. It didn't start in the 1970s, but the truth is that a reliable supply of cheap labor from other countries makes it easier for American companies to avoid paying higher wages to their American employees. The specifics are going to vary from case to case, but for example, imagine that a business can pay workers overseas $5 per hour for the same work they would have to pay somebody $7.25 in the US. Now, maybe there will be some extra costs associated with outsourcing. They might have to pay more for shipping or training, but if they think they can save money by shifting labor overseas, then that's exactly what they're going to do. So it's not just that American workers are competing with other American workers, they're also competing with people in other countries that may not have the same minimum wage or the same labor protections. This isn't to say that integrating our economy with other countries is only a bad thing. There are definitely advantages. But one disadvantage is that workers around the world are forced to undercut each other in order to compete for the same jobs. Now, one problem this could bring up is the fact that raising the minimum wage might actually backfire by giving companies even more reasons to outsource labor. So it's intuitive there's a trade-off between increasing wages and decreasing the pool of available jobs. This is another point where there are a lot of conflicting studies. I don't want to say anything definitive, but the graph with wages and productivity shows that employers will generally avoid giving those gains to workers, and I don't see any reason to think that wouldn't apply in this situation. Ultimately, the fundamental goal of businesses is to make money, not necessarily for the workers, but for the owners, the shareholders, and they'll do whatever they think is the most efficient way to make that happen. So in my view, it's only through policy changes that we can hope to jumpstart wages, especially since we've seen productivity go up so much and it hasn't led to a similar bump in wages. All right, everybody, I know this is a complex topic. There's so much to consider in this conversation. Don't want to say I have the perfect solution or anything like that, but from my perspective, these four trends are cutting into working class wages, and it just isn't a sustainable trend. A recent report from the National Low Income Housing Coalition found that the average American needs to earn roughly $20 per hour in order to afford even a one-bedroom apartment, and other crucial costs like health care and education have become more expensive much more quickly than wages, particularly at the lowest level. So all things considered, these are not signs of a healthy economy. Maybe they don't hurt the stock market quite as much, but that doesn't mean they aren't problems. And as I said earlier, I'm not claiming to be an expert on these issues. There are a lot of valid perspectives here. So make sure to leave a comment if you have any thoughts on increasing wages. All right, thanks so much for watching to the end of the video. I really appreciate it, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.